All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I will go around and greet each person to begin with, beginning with Bob O. And Tyler, sitting outside in the sunshine. Joseph. Mark. Ken, I know you're there. Bob K. Paulette. Sam, Greg, Joan, Karen, Alice, Marv, Alvin, Randy, or Doshin, Pat, Sarah, Etzido, Coral and Carson, Sabrina, Amelia, and Ruth Ann. I think that's everyone. There was some moving around while I was going over the screen, so I might have missed somebody. But all right. I can't think of any announcements except for save the dates for the August session. I haven't updated the details on the website yet. It still looks like we're going out of town, but we're not. August 23rd through the 28th. And it will be an online thing, but it might have a little bit of an in-person component at the Zendo, depending on how things are at that point, and that people who have been vaccinated could come and participate in person. But anybody's welcome to participate online. Obviously, many of you from afar will be having to take that option, if nothing else. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And June 27th, Sunday, is our Jukai ceremony. And I think there will be 6 people receiving the precepts, and 2 people will be here in person and 4 will be remote. And hopefully we'll just have it all set up so that we can have a ceremony at our Zendo so Bob K and I are going to be working on getting the internet at the Zendo this week and getting things set up so that we can do something at the Zendo with just a few people, right? And then, but then have it streamed so that everybody can witness. Yeah. Any questions or other things I should announce? All right. Hold on a second. Water. So today's talk, I'm calling it, "Does Buddhism encourage us to improve the world? And does it matter?" So I ended up on this topic because I read a tricycle article in the latest Tricycle magazine by Donald S. Lopez Jr. They titled it "Buddhism in the Real World and the Real World." And the subtitle is, "As calls for social action resound throughout the land, what resources are provided by the Dharma?" And then the little subtitle is, "For most of its history, the Dharma has had little to offer in the domain of social action, but that's okay." So I think I just get Tricycle magazine. I subscribe digitally, but I get the paper anyway. I think just because I took on an ad for the podcast in there once or something. So I rarely get around to reading it. But this one obviously piqued my attention for reasons that many of you realize, because I'm involved in climate activism and always curious about the connection between Buddhism and that, and is there anything in Buddhism that tells us to take action, whatever. So, and I've certainly sought, as many of you who listen to the podcast know, I've certainly sought for support, encouragement, teachings, justification, whatever, within Buddhism for, you know, why we should take action, why we should take care of our planet. But I honestly have come up with frustratingly little. So I was very intrigued by Lopez's treatment of this subject. And I was also curious about his, but that's okay, conclusion. So the questions that this raised for me, so I realized that, you know, not all of you, maybe very few of you actually are intrigued by this particular question of, does Buddhism have support for social action? But I would say that this, there's a larger question that I suspect everyone will relate to, which is, when we hold that we have deeply held values and concerns that we're bringing, in a sense, to Buddhism, especially if we're a convert, right? We have certain deeply held values and concerns, which maybe because we're in Western culture, maybe because we're in modern times, maybe because we're a layperson, whatever, we bring this to Buddhism. And then it's important for some of us, it's important to find within Buddhism some kind of support for what we already value, some encouragement, some teachings to take advantage of, some practices to take advantage of. So we kind of come to Buddhism with a set of hopes or expectations. And my proposal is that in many ways, Buddhism, as it evolved throughout history, as we encounter it now, in many cases does not support or encourage the values that we bring to it. Some of them, yes. I mean, certainly, like morality and reflection and how we, you know, there's many things that we find useful in it, but sometimes there's things we bring to it that not so much. So I would say, for instance, our values about equality, our sense that all beings, and I'm not saying, I'm hoping that everybody here agrees with this, but some of the things I list, you may or may not be a core concern or value to you. But for many of us, right, equality, regardless of gender, of race, of nation of origin, of in socioeconomic level, etc., like, and not just equality, but a sense of equity, like there should be fairness. There should be fairness in the world. Love of family. I think most of us probably, like, you know, our relationships with our family, our commitments to our family, our appreciation of our familial and love relationships and friendships are, you know, core to who we are. Eh, you know, not really so much in Buddhism that focuses on that or celebrates that or gives you practices for that. Appreciation for art, music, artistic expression. If you find anything in Buddhism about it, it's usually about, like, monks should not partake in such things. The value of hard work and personal responsibility in terms of worldly commitments and finances. Celebration of individuality. A belief that's important to honor, explore, process, and express one's emotions before letting them go. A belief that a true spiritual path should be accessible to everyone, regardless of their mental, physical, or spiritual capacities. So kind of egalitarianism in our religion. So I propose that many of these things are values we hold largely because of our culture, because of our, I don't know, you know, just maybe they're just core to being a person in many ways. Many of our modern, many of them are lay values, and most of them are just not really emphasized in Buddhism if they're presented as values at all. And some are actually discouraged. So what do we do? What do we do about that, right? Like, so even though I'm gonna spend some time on this, exploring how Buddhism doesn't really support social action, which I find disappointing, but in a way, like, it's better to face the truth, you know, than delude yourself. So I'm going to explore that, and then I'm going to come back to the question of, wow, it's already 11:30. I'm going to try to whip through this because I want to get to a point where we come together in breakout rooms to discuss, like, what values and concerns do you have that you don't find so much support for in Buddhism? Or maybe you're not sure. And then what do you do? What do you do about it? Because I feel like there are two options. And I don't think one is right and one is wrong or anything. But I think, because some people don't mind at all, right? I get this from Buddhism and I get this from something else, right? I also value this, and I, you know, through reading or spiritual authority, I have another community that I go emphasize this with, right? They just have no problem just picking and choosing what they need. And if you're one of those people, then I guess maybe today's talk won't be as relevant for you, but maybe you'll get some insight into some of us who feel some kind of compulsion to integrate all the aspects of our life. And for some of us, Buddhism has been such a profound and rich way to approach our life. And it has so many practices for exploring our minds and our behavior, and so many ways that it can liberate us and help us interact with the world and make sense of the world and cope with the world. And it's so fruitful that I think it's pretty natural to want to, like, well, what does Buddhism say about this? How can I apply Buddhism to this? How can I, so essentially it's like taking those deeply held values and concerns and trying to stretch Buddhism to fit them or to incorporate them into Buddhism, if you will. So for instance, like, a lot of those things that I listed, and I'm saying there's not a lot of support for in Buddhism, that's not really true if you can include the teachings of contemporary teachers. So if you look at the writings of teachers from the last couple decades, the teachings of, you know, whether it's Zen or Vipassana or whatever, there's all kinds of support for lay practice, for appreciating, learning how to appreciate your life and honor your family relationships and process your emotions and accept your emotions and the importance of self-acceptance and self-love and self-care. There's not that much in Buddhism about that, really. But modern teachers are teaching that, right? So then that raises the question, you know, at what point does it become Buddhism? What is Buddhism? Is Buddhism just what's in the ancient texts? What Buddhism was 2,500 years ago? Is it what the majority of Buddhists agree on? What is it, right? Do we just add anything we want to it, or what? So let me then just get to this kind of case study, if you will, of social action. So in Lopez's article, he begins with a story where he was at a Tibetan refugee monastery in India doing his dissertation research. and he noticed that the young monks of the monastery had some kind of skin problem that he knew probably could be easily treated. And he had extra money, you know, relative to the culture, from his scholarship and stuff. So he offered to the abbot of the monastery, he said, I'm happy to have the little young monks go to the local doctor and have their skin condition treated. And the abbot said, oh, that's not necessary. However, if you would like to donate the money, we're going to build a big Maitreya statue. So that was like one of his first, that's where he starts his story. And he goes on to discuss that while, you know, that's one of the core values within Buddhism, one of the first perfections is dana or generosity. But to be honest, within Buddhism, that has always been associated with the idea that giving generates merit, and you generate more merit if you give it to purer sources. So if you give it to the Sangha, or you give it to the temple, you give it to, so the temple can be, you know, expanded or supported or build a statue or something like that, that is the giving that generates the most merit. So you can see where there's like, it's kind of a practical, you could feel kind of cynical about this, right? Like, of course the monks are teaching people that it's the most merit if you give us the money and the support, you know, than if you give it to someone else. So you could look at that as cynical, but, you know, on the other hand, you could see it as a sense of mutual aid, right? The monks have to have that support to survive, and the lay people get something out of the teachings and the presence of the monks and the presence of the temples. But there's definitely no emphasis on giving because the people who you're giving to really need it. That's not really like why you're giving. That's kind of flipping it over on its head. In stark contrast to Christianity, of course, where charity to the poor and suffering is like, that's one of the major ways to generate, you know, to cultivate yourself spiritually and work toward rebirth in heaven, right? So it's, you know, you find the poor and the needy, and those are who you give to. So, and even in modern times, the emphasis on dana has really been about your attitude, your willingness to let go, not so much because you are obligated to help other people, because other people are suffering and you need to do something about it. So another aspect that Lopez goes into is the worldview of classical Buddhism. The world of samsara cannot be saved. So in alignment with this fact, Lopez says, quote, Buddhism has in many ways been more concerned with the future than the present, more about the next world than this one. And this may seem odd because Buddhism doesn't, you know, we're not emphasizing rebirth in a heaven realm, right? We have a heaven realm, but you don't stay there. So that's not the ultimate goal, is to be released from the whole cycle. So in some ways you might say, like, religions that emphasize a heaven are more life affirming than Buddhism, because we say, nah, you want off the whole deal. And then there's also been a belief in Buddhism from the beginning that the world is going through stages of decay. So there was the time of the true Dharma, which was around Shakyamuni, and then there was the time of the semblance of the true Dharma, and then there's the demise of the true Dharma. I'm not saying these are like core Buddhist teachings that are important to understand or accept or anything. I get nothing personally out of these teachings. But, you know, in terms of looking at the tradition, you know, taking off the rose-colored glasses and really trying to look at it honestly. It's had a pretty negative view of the world. Definitely, even if you set that aside, definitely has not had any vision of the world that, like, we can make this a heaven on earth, right? We can make this a wonderful, just place where there, we minimize suffering, and there's really nothing proposed like that. I mean, Maitreya is going to come eventually, the future Buddha, but that's only after everything's pretty much gone to toast. So, as Lopez writes, we live in a world of samsara, a world that is by its very nature marked with suffering, impermanence, and no self, a world that is an irreversible decline that is irredeemable. We should come to think of life as like a prison from which we must escape with all the urgency of a person whose hair is on fire. These texts say little about trying to repair the disintegrating foundation. So what about like Brahma Viharas and these other kind of virtues? Like the Brahma Viharas are very inspiring. I've done podcast episodes on them. Goodwill, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity. Okay. These are the sublime social attitudes. They are really, in Buddhism, the emphasis is still on the self. It's on my cultivation of lack of attachment. I cultivate that lack of attachment, and therefore, when the opportunity to give, when the opportunity to be compassionate arises, that flows naturally. It's not about me cultivating those things for your sake. It's not about like you must think of other people and try to make them happy because of the result. The result will be an improvement in their situation. So, I mean, what about the Mahayana ideal? I mean, come on, if nothing else, right? The ideal of the Bodhisattva has got to be a source for like social action. So Lopez covers this too. And he doesn't quote this, but I pulled this out because Shantideva, who wrote The Way of the Bodhisattva, and it's one of the most inspiring Mahayana pieces on the Bodhisattva. And he says, quote, as long as sentient beings are ill, until their ailments are cured, may I be their medicine, their doctor, and their nurse as well. May showers of food and drink relieve the torments of hunger and thirst. In intermediate eons of famine, may I become food and drink. To benefit all sentient beings, I give without hesitation my body, my belongings, and all virtues of the three times. So elsewhere, Shantideva says something about, in The Way of the Bodhisattva, there being two types of bodhicitta. And it's interesting because I had on my list of podcast episodes I wanted to do one based on this other passage where he called it like bodhisattva, a bodhicitta, the mind of a bodhisattva, something like the aspiration to bodhicitta is different from active bodhicitta. So I wanted to write a whole podcast episode about like, see, you're supposed to actually take action. This has got to be, you know, rubber to the road. It's not just a nice thought. But because of the Lopez article, I end up looking at another translation. And that other translation doesn't make it sound quite the same. So in this other translation, it's the mind aspiring for awakening versus engagement in awakening. So he says both are beneficial, but there's a big difference between the wish to go somewhere and actually going. So engaged bodhicitta has more of an impact. So in a way, it's like, okay, well, we're aspiring to, you know, be generous bodhisattvas, but it's until we actually do have that attitude, you know, there's a big difference between wishing you had that attitude and having the attitude. But again, this is the focus, I'm not saying it's has to be limited, but the focus is definitely on our attitude. Because Lopez points out another Shantideva passage. If ridding the world of poverty made generosity transcendent, there are still paupers. So how could the past protectors or Buddhas have transcended? The wish to give all your belongings and the results to everyone is taught to be transcendent giving, and therefore that is mind itself. So Lopez concludes, the perfection of giving is an attitude. In Sanskrit, it is described as sitam eva, just a thought. He goes on to quote an inspiring passage by the 4th century Indian scholar Asanga, describing how a bodhisattva attends selflessly and tirelessly to all suffering beings, nursing the sick, helping the disabled, teaching sign language to the deaf, protecting beings from all kinds of fears. And then he concludes, this passage, as inspiring as it is, portrays the bodhisattva as a cosmic social worker. It does not portray the bodhisattva as a political organizer. So it's tricky interpreting all this stuff, right? I'm sure that in another mood, or another teacher, or maybe you could look at these same things and say, oh, no, it is, you know, arguing for social action. But, you know, just to revisit that larger question. So what if Buddhism doesn't really affirm these values? And does it matter? So I think it's useful to look at those values that we hold, and where do they come from, and how do we, you know, relate Buddhism to them? I would say that I have a belief that the world can and should be improved. And that's actually a very modern and Western view. Because we look at how it has been improved, right? We have some evidence. Women can vote. I can be a Zen teacher. Like, shit has changed. People did that. So it's become part of our cultural assumption and understanding that, like, the world should be and can be improved. Now, how far we think we might get, you know, everybody's going to be all over the map on that one, but we should at least try, I feel like, is a deep cultural value. That radical change is possible, and that it's worth it. That the world, I think our culture has got a lot of different aspects, but it's generally life affirming, right? It's generally like life is worth it. It can be really tough, but it's beautiful and precious. And so a lot of times, like, part of the reason we practice is to be able to be more present for our lives and more appreciative of our lives and enjoy each thing, you know, enjoy the beautiful flower and the music and the presence of our loved ones and all that, you know. So that is, are we going to give that up because Buddhism doesn't have support for it? I'm sure not. But so I'm kind of curious. That's where I wanted to just had more to say, but I will just maybe leave it there and put it, have us go into breakouts and answer the question. So just to review some of these things that values that I do not see reflected in Buddhism very much at all. You may disagree. Values of justice, equality, appreciation for nature, an admiration for lay practice as an equal or even higher path than the monastic path, not just because practice is possible in lay life, but that actually you face practice challenges and practice opportunities that are lacking in monastic life. So there's that. the importance of deeply appreciating our lives, because life lived without such appreciation is a waste. Celebration of the individual, self-acceptance, self-love, self-care, all that, self-expression. So what, you know, do you have any deeply held values or concerns that Buddhism doesn't particularly encourage, or that maybe doesn't? Maybe I'm raising some questions in your mind about that. And what, I mean, do you care? Maybe you don't particularly, so what? You know, I can go, you know, avail myself of some other tradition, some other author, some other book, whatever. And if you care, I mean, do you simply draw your inspiration from other sources? Or is there a part of you that kind of does want to improve Buddhism, to expand Buddhism, to incorporate it, to find it within Buddhism? So, yeah, I will give you, you know, 10, 12 minutes or so, and then we'll come back and report back. So any questions before, you know, like, what are we talking about before we go off? Sometimes people are like, sometimes I drop into the rooms and then I find people going like, what? And what was that again? So don't be shy. Any questions?
Yeah, I'm having that problem. I'm trying to grasp what it is we're talking about. Can you say it another way?
So if you does Buddhism give you everything you need when you're looking for guidance or support or inspiration? Does Buddhism give you everything you need, or are there places that you find it lacking? And if you find it lacking, what do you do about it? Do you just, you know, go find what you need somewhere else? Or do you really try to, I don't know, try to comb through the Buddhist teachings, or, you know, avail yourself of some of these more modern teachers that are expanding the idea of Buddhism? Do you want to try to kind of find it within a Buddhist framework? Does that help? All right. You could sit quietly outside of a health food grocery store with a sandwich board on that just says something from the heart. That's part of what Extinction Rebellion is doing. It's called a rebellion of one. And you put a sandwich board on, you say, I am terrified, and you put something personal. I'm terrified my niece and nephew have no future because of the climate crisis. And there's something different about that than a protest, than an in-your-face, like, you should do something different. Just one person just speaking their truth. Anyway, hello, welcome back, everyone. yeah. Have some interesting things to share. I would love to hear some of the interesting stuff that came up in people's rooms. So go ahead and raise your hand electronically or unmute yourself. Go ahead, Ruthann.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know I was, lighting up, but, yes, I think, Greta Thunberg, started that way, one person. And, I like the Buddhist image of act as though your hair is on fire, and then realize, detach from the outcome, because it's not about you individually, or, you know, get away from the dualism. Just be aware. Thank you.
Thank you. Vin.
Uh, our group talked about it, and the consensus was that we didn't mind that Buddhism did not provide everything for everything. We felt that Buddhism provides something for everything, but it doesn't provide everything for everything. And that, in fact, it's the result of its, like any human institution, it developed within a certain cultural milieu and passed through multiple milieus and is shaped by them. So yeah, it doesn't bother us. Did not bother us.
All right. Good to know. I think part of this, to be honest, might be essentially me confessing a koan that I am working on, particularly because I am a Buddhist teacher. I get my authority from a tradition, and I get my authority from having trained in that tradition and staying true to that tradition and being able to communicate it to people in a way that they understand. And for myself, this is what Marv and I were talking about, for myself, I cannot do anything other than my climate activism. It seems to me to be like, I cannot authentically live as a bodhisattva and let the world, everything, every life on earth go extinct. I can't. That would be ridiculous. But I have not found enough of a grounding for insisting that you do that, that I can use my platform as a Buddhist teacher to encourage you to act with me. I do not feel like I can really do that. I feel like it is my manifestation of being a bodhisattva, but it is not, I cannot ground it firmly enough in Buddhism to offer it as if it is part of the teaching. And I'm kind of bummed about that, frankly. Joseph.
Well, first of all, thank you for embracing the vulnerability and speaking to your personal passion. There's nothing wrong with that. So that's perfectly okay. So I appreciate that. My take would be, I feel like between the precepts, there's both active and passive tools within Buddhism, but I feel like for me, for the most part, covers the gambit. So when I think about the active ones, I think about the precepts, pretty specifically stated. Okay, I got those. We were talking in our group a little bit about the bodhisattva vows. I kind of tuned in specifically on delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. And some of the kind of quote unquote shit that we've gotten through, right? Like, you know, women can vote and, you know, some of this great stuff. I feel like we as flawed humans, we're born perfect. We learn greed, anger, hate, intolerance, bigotry, all of that stuff. And I feel like some of the stuff we're actually overcoming ourselves. And so for me, that's what ties back in with the delusions. And so I vow to end them. And then I was also thinking about the Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them, specifically in kind of the realm of, I don't know that to me, I feel like is a call for my action. I don't feel like it's a call necessarily to go out and act for the benefit of others. So that one I'm struggling a little bit with, but those are the things that are going through my mind. So thank you for listening.
I think Ken was next.
Tyler is actually next.
Oh, all right. Go ahead, Tyler.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, I guess I was just thinking, I'm new to this, but when I read the Bodhisattva vows, I read them as like a call to action, like as an active thing, right? And so I guess, but that's just me bringing, like, I have a background in activism with my pre-kid life and with my kids. And so I guess when I'm reading all this, like, I'm projecting these views onto what I'm reading. And I find it so interesting to find out that maybe that's not the case, and that, like, you're just putting what you want it to say into there, which is so intriguing to me. And so part of me is like, well, yeah, I'll just, you know, times have changed, and you got to read the work or the sutras with that. But then, as you say, if that's not what's actually being said, that can be good. I could be like, oh, I'll find a Buddhist teacher that says, yeah, we need to go out and be active for the climate change. But other people could go and find a Buddhist teacher that says, no, like, you know, women really shouldn't be allowed to do this. And if that, you know, like, if we're just going to find what we want in it and use that and go ahead, like, that's really a problem, because I view it as how to do it in what I think is good, but other people might do it in what they think is good, where I'm like, oh God, no. So it's just been a really intriguing conversation to have. So I appreciate it a lot.
And I hope I haven't upset anyone or, like, dashed your ideas about Buddhism. I think this is, you know, I guess for me, what this feels like is underneath this whole discussion, which the topics may resonate with you or not, they may be troubling or not, but underneath this all is a deeper aspect of Buddhist practice, which is shining the light of truth on anything. It's always good to shine the light of truth, even if it's kind of confusing or hurts at first. It's always good. So, like, to question everything. So this isn't saying, like, Buddhism doesn't say, you know, the world should be just, but does it, like, and why does it matter to us? And I feel like exploring that kind of thing, like, in what way am I needing justification from the outside for what I know to be true in my heart? Or, you know, so I think just hopefully you don't mind just wrestling with the question. Ken.
Thank you. Yeah, truth, shining the light. I feel like I said something about this last week. Are the Dharma talks similar, or is it just me?
I don't know. It's all me. It's all me. So my mind is going to go along a path, right? So I don't know.
All right. Well, I think if you are practicing and you're mindful and you are honest about your experience and what you're going through, you are being socially active, even on a minor level. Like, and I think we need everybody to have their kuleana, like their thing that they do, because we need it all. Like, Gomyo, we need you to be in Extinction Rebellion, and I have a poster up in one of my Airbnb rooms about Extinction Rebellion and not wasting the fossil fuel heater that's in there. And but for me, like, it's about I was a social worker in the United States, and I worked with a lot of mentally ill people, and then later found out that I have what's considered a disability in some states in terms of my mental health. And just living that and using that as my practice and being really open about it, for me, is social action on a certain scale. If people see me, because I'm, like, not, like, running around with a knife in my hand, so, like, so, you know, I mean, I've come pretty close, but I haven't done that. And So I think that if we do practice with our minds and with our hearts, I think that Buddhism can support any action that we do. And in terms of the Bodhisattva vow and cherishing all life, you're absolutely right, Domnyo. We're not just cherishing and preserving the life of what's on the planet right now, but we're cherishing and preserving the life of what's on the planet 100 years from now. So that's my 2 or 3 cents. Thank you.
All right. Well, we've come to that time again. I feel like we could have a much longer, interesting conversation. One of these times when we're like, yeah. Thank you all for being present. I would love to know what is in each one of your heads. So I don't know. I mean, if you have thoughts after this and you have like concerns or questions or just stuff you want to share, I'd love to just send me an email at info@brightwayzen.org. And that's on the website. I think I'm going to record the first part of my podcast on this topic tonight. But a lot of times if I do a topic with the Dharma talk first, it's kind of nice because it informs what I end up saying on the podcast. So because of the interaction with all of you. So anyway, I'll say our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Hi, all.
Thank you.